Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. Today, I am joined by a coach who is part of leading the NCAA in sacks allowed. They only allowed 8 on the season last year. Is a guy who I've been aware of for some time now, came across some of his resources digitally, and we'll talk about that, how I learned about this coach. But he is now the offensive line coach at Bryant University, Stephen Siasi. Stephen, great to have you here on the podcast.
Thank you. Really appreciate you guys having me. Excited to be here today.
Well, Stephen, you've had a pretty good young career here as you've progressed through the ranks and now have worked yourself to a full-time position as Bryant's offensive line coach in FCS school. This past season, though, in 2018, you were the offensive assistant line coach at FIU, and you guys were one of the best in the country in protecting the quarterback. Only allowed 8 sacks on the season. You guys played in 13 games, had a bowl game in there, and I could say the two teams that are above you run a different type of offense. It was Army and Air Force, and you know, heavy run game with those teams, not necessarily those drop back kind of teams. But you guys with a balanced offense, what you did there to protect the passer at only 0.62 sacks per game, I think is pretty incredible. What do you attribute that to as you look back at the 2018 season?
Yeah, so, the first thing I always tell guys, when people ask is, technique. And the thing about the 2018 FIU offensive line, they were led by the best offensive line coach, in my opinion, in the nation, and Alan Mogridge. The level of detail to mastering our technique and our footwork and all of our individual drills in the summer offseason and spring ball really is what kind of led to that. It was a very different structure type of practice in that we would slow things down and really hone the technique and take the time in pre-practice to get out there early and take the time in practice to make sure that the technique was solid, that we played with independent hands, which I'll get into in a little bit. And, really the guys just made a total commitment. I have so much credit and love for those guys and what they were able to do. And then, the second big thing was it was the scheme / ID of the defense. And a lot of people want to talk scheme and, what type of protections did you run and all that. It was simply to me what I learned the most from it. Our guys knew who they were IDing. They knew who they were blocking. And our scheme dictated a lot of what we were able to do against certain defenses. So we took advantage of what the defenses were giving us, rather than try to say that we were going to run a set protection and that's what we were going to be good at. So week to week, it kind of morphed into itself, play action, quick game, drop back. And, Coach Skrosky, the offense coordinator, I think is the best, like I said about Coach Mulder, is the best in the nation at that. And I attribute those two things, the technique and the overall master ID and scheme, to why we had the success we had.
And I want to go into detail on both of those with you here in this podcast. Before we do that, though, I want to talk a little bit about your path here through the coaching profession. As I mentioned in the beginning, I learned of you through I was given your offensive line manual. One of my former assistants when I was the offensive coordinator at Baldwin-Wallace University, my running backs coach, was Tony Testa. He's now the head football coach at West Virginia Wesleyan. And yeah. I can't quite remember the connection you had with Coach Testa, but Tony had given me some resources as he was coming through the Cleveland area on a recruiting trip, and we shared some things. And as I was going through, I opened up this offensive line manual from Pace University, and I was blown away by the detail in a position manual. And not just the detail, but the way you made it a multimedia manual. So it was more than just PowerPoint. You had the videos in there too, and I can't remember how much space it took up, but that didn't matter. It was
a lot.
It was incredible. You did a great job with that. And from there, then I started to follow, like, okay, who is this guy? Where's he going? And then there was the connection made through Vince DiGaetano, who's now at Fordham.
Yep.
Vince is on the show all the time. I feel like I should make him a host. He's on so much. But then, you know, found out, I'm like, hey, I know this guy who's with here. I believe it was at Wagner. You were at Wagner at the time. So anyway, Coach, that's kind of how I learned of you. And again, very impressed with the things you had done to put together your offensive line manual. But talk to us a little bit about your journey through coaching with the start of it. Where did it begin, I guess, this idea that you were going to be a football coach?
Yep. So I got done playing football. 2012 season was my last year playing college football at Wagner College in Staten Island, New York. We had won the NEC title that year, finished, I think, 21st in Division I AA football. And I had known my entire life I wanted to coach. And when I first got to college, I thought I was going to go back to high school and coach in my alma mater, Springfield Area High School in Pennsylvania. Got into college coaching because the closer I got to graduation, I kind of saw more and more teammates of mine and friends of mine from high school that played at different colleges that when they got to the end of their college career, kind of had that almost, you kind of, when football's over, you think about how much time it takes in our life. And a lot of young men get more lost than after high school than they do in college. And I was kind of shocked by that. I'd always thought, you know, high school coach, I'm helping young men get to college. Cause my coach in high school, Gary Rodenbaugh, was the most incredible influence on me. He's a second father to me, and he helped me get to where I need to get to. And but what I saw in college was so many guys are lost. Like, all of a sudden, this sport that consumes your life and you dedicate everything to it, it's gone like that, and you've got to, and it's tough to adjust. So I decided then, by my junior year of college, I was going to get into college coaching, so I could help not only coach college football, but I could help those young men make that transition from football into the next stage of their life and business and jobs and families. So 2013, right after the season got over in 12 that winter, I went into the head coach, Coach Walt Hamline, and I told him I wanted a GA for him. And Coach Hamline told me that he didn't allow former players to GA for him, that he felt they needed to go away first and then come back. Came back the next day and kept asking him. So he finally relented. I was the assistant O-line coach in 2013 at Wagner. In 2014, Coach Hamline's last year, I got promoted to offensive tackles and tight ends coach. I was really lucky in that I was able to work under an incredible offensive line coach in Stephon Wheeler, who's now the O-line coach. Ironically, I had a joke with him about it at the University of Rhode Island. So the two of us were GAs at the time, getting our master's, and we both now are Division I AA O-line coaches in the smallest state in America. 2014, we had a good year. We were co-champs in the league, and my GA was up. You know, Coach Hamline, I met with him. Coach Haas, who was my O-line coach in college, had just taken over the head job. You know, he told me I needed to go kind of get something else on my resume. So I wound up going to Pace University in New York. I worked under Andy Rondo, head football coach there. Taught me more than I ever thought I would know. And Andy is a coach. When people ask me, you know, what did you learn from your different spots in your career, I tell everyone, Andy taught me more about how to be organized and recruit and detailed in the office than any other coach has ever taught me. Like how to take, like, everyone loves doing the stuff on the field. Like, a lot of young coaches, like, all they want to do is get to practice, you know, get to games. Andy taught me the importance of everything on the other side, in the office, you know, in the film room, in the staff detail. And so I was at Pace University as the offensive line coach, Division II program for a year. Summer of 2016, Coach Hoteling at Wagner called me, said he wanted me to come back and coach at Wagner. I came back as the defensive line coach, special teams coordinator and recruiting coordinator, which was a difference. I always wanted to be an O-line coach. When he offered me the job, it was a chance to be a coordinator at the FCS level in special teams. And it was also a chance for me to go to the other side of the ball, which, you know, I reached out to a lot of people and they were like, you need to do that. And that was the best decision I ever did. In terms of, it allowed me to see O-line play from a completely different animal and a different view of looking at it and how I addressed it, how I attacked offenses. And then special teams, having to coach kids from every single position. That was probably the best thing I gained out of that, was having to now talk to DBs, you know, talk to receivers, to tight ends, all these kids, and coach them up and, you know, run all these different units on the field. And that taught me a ton. So I did that in 2016, 2017. At the end of the 2017 season, I still had a couple of years left to GA. I made a decision to leave a full-time job where I was making good money, to go down to FIU. Alan Mogridge has been a guy, the O-line coach there, who I've respected for a long, long time. And I knew I wanted to get back to the offense side of the ball, and I felt like I wasn't getting a lot of headway when I was reaching out for jobs about it. So I went down to FIU. I worked under Alan Mogridge, coaching the offensive line, Coach Skrosky, your offensive coordinator, and then Butch Davis, and then just our whole offensive staff, you know, Drew Davis, tight ends coach, you know, Tim Harris, run backs coach, Aubrey Hill, receivers coach, and then Ken Dorsey was our associate AD. And just being around that type of culture and those type of coaches, it completely shaped and further developed me, and it's the best decision I ever made. And it's a decision I couldn't have made and done without the support of my parents, my wife, and a lot of my friends, because it was something where you go away from being a full-time coach coordinator to being a GA. Did that, learned a ton last year. And then this winter, when the Bryant job opened up and coach reached out, it was an easy decision for me.
You were telling me before we got started too, that the relationship with Coach Merritt really started with USA Football and our national teams program, which I think is just a great opportunity for coaches to network as well. There's a lot of guys, both great 100%. Coaches from a high school level as well as college level, that it's a unique opportunity, and it started there for you. You mentioned you kind of had a funny story about the beginning of that relationship.
Yeah. It started with coaching against Coach Merritt in 2013 at a USA developmental camp at UMass Dartmouth, where Coach was the opposing head coach. And we had agreed to not blitz more than one person during the games. And first play of the game, they ran middle X pressure against us for a sack. And I'm just staring across the field like, who the heck is this guy? And we had just agreed on this. And then from there, we had done a bunch of camps together. And I had recruited a few of Coach Merritt's players. I had played with a former player of his, and Eddie Garcia, an offensive lineman who played alongside the championship team at Wagner with me in 2012. Eddie was a Columbus High School offensive lineman down Miami. And so there was a lot of connections. And then being at FIU, you know, they were about 10 minutes away from our campus. You know, Coach and I had kept in touch. And, you know, actually a couple of our players on the roster down there were from Columbus. And so we had developed a really good relationship over the years. And it was kind of one of those unique things that you find out in college, you know, football in general, that it's such a small connected world. And it always surprises you when those connections pop back up.
Well, Coach, let's get into the details of what you mentioned here. The two things that really enabled you guys to lead the country in protecting the passer: the technique side of things, as you mentioned, some of the ways you practiced as well went into that. And then we could talk a little bit about, you know, your scheme and the way you guys ID things. So let's look at the technique part first. And I think, you know, doesn't matter how good that scheme is, if you don't have technique behind it, you're not going to have the success that you guys had. So talk to us a little bit about how you guys developed that technique and what that technique is for you.
No doubt. You know, first thing we always talked about, and now, you know, Brian, I always talk about, it starts with the feet first. So whenever we start a training technique for pass pro, for offensive line, we talk about being from the roots up, so starting from the ground up. So every drill we do to start, it involves putting your feet and your body in the position to win. So something as simple as a pass set drill where you're working your kick and your post. You know, we would not involve the hands. Everything was on air. We would have a tennis ball in our hands just to work, you know, the constant movement of our hands. But it was all about teaching the guys the awareness, you know, give them landmarks to understand this is where I've got to get to versus this type of rush, a wide rush. All right, tight guy, a guy's tight on me, you know, a short step, you know, I'm just posting right now or lifting myself up on my pass pro. So big mistake, I think, that in my journey I've watched and I made myself as in as a younger line coach is you want to hit things, and that's our nature as offensive linemen. And we want to work the punch and pass pro, and we want to work, you know, all these things. And in reality, it starts at the ground up. And that was the first thing that I learned, you know, down there, was just was watching us and coaching it. We would not involve any initial strike, any initial, you know, punch or anything like that until, you know, our guys have really mastered the proper technique, you know, the bend of the knees, the proper posture of the back, the eyes, the hand placement. So everything there started feet first from the roots up. From there, we progressed to involving the hands. And, the big debate, if you look at O-line circles, is independent hands versus a double punch, you know, using both hands to punch. And when you watch offensive line play from years ago, you generally see people pass that. You see them punch with both hands. And nowadays, the more you watch offensive line play, especially the tackle position, you know, a little bit more guard now as well, you know, in that center too with the offense, you're seeing guys set and you're seeing guys throw one hand first. You know, independent hands, 1-2, quick strike. And we spend a lot of time teaching when to single hand punch, when to double punch. And that to me is a huge technique thing. And the whole theory and thought process behind it is, you know, when you single punch, I'm a left tackle, I'm going against a DN, 5 technique. When I punch with my left hand, that's allowing my body to stay more square and longer. And that right hand is my drag hand. That's allowing me to protect from any inside move. And also, if they take away my left hand, that is my counter blow right now. So the game has really evolved more to that. Whereas the double punch is more of, if I'm getting a bull rush, speed to power, where I've got to engage a little bit more power in my body, lock my hips, and be able to anchor down. And Coach Mogridge did an incredible job of getting the guys to understand the body position, like I said, starting with the feet first, and then transitioning from that into the hands, the punch, when to strike, how to strike, you know, thumbs up, elbow screwed in, you know, just we taught everything from the ground all the way up, and the final part was, you know, going into the hands. And then the last part of the technique thing, I think that we spend a huge amount of time on, which is probably the biggest issue I see at all the high school camps and college camps I've gone to this summer, seeing high school kids and youth football kids right now, is understanding the pocket presence of the game. Like, your technique's important, but you have to understand where you are at in the pocket. So if you're a tackle, you know, the way we always kind of described it was, you have between that 3 to 5 yards to work with. If you're a guard, you've got 1 yard to work with. Your back's against the wall. And if you're a center, understanding based off the protection, where I've got to get back to the wall of the offensive line. I've got to get back and over to make sure that I'm at the same level of the guards. You know, when I go to one-on-ones, you know, that's what a lot of camps have kind of divulged to, you know, parents just want to see one-on-ones. You see guards that are backpedaling 5 yards. You see tackles that are trying to grab guys on line scrimmage. And that's a big issue, I think, right now in the game. And that we really addressed and did a great job of teaching was understanding the pocket presence of it. And kind of what we talked about with that was understanding the mentality of where you're at, you know. So kind of like we talked about in my old pace manual, I'm a big visual guy. Mm-hmm. So the visual we always kind of encourage was, anyone who's seen the movie 300, there's two scenes that we kind of related Pass Pro to. There's the one where the Persians get pushed over the cliff. Yep. Like, they're trying to dig in. It doesn't matter. They're just getting shoved off the cliff. And then the other visual is when they're in the valley there and the Persian army flies at them. They anchor down. They cannot move them because they're so interlocked and tight, the grid, the Spartans. They're so tight and locked. And that's pass pro. Like, it's having that wall, back against the wall mentality, understanding where you're at, when to make contact. And I thought Coach Mogridge did a better job than anyone I've ever seen teaching that. And it was a blast being able to teach them, work with that.
Let's talk a little bit about the details of the feet, and then I do want to get into teaching the mixed hands a little bit. So for you, some, I guess, fundamental drills or drills that you really feel are important to work your guys, and they probably are a little bit different for your positions on the edges versus the guys who are on the interior. But what's the footwork you start to work with these guys and teach them, in order to, again, to have that kind of success?
No doubt. You know, the first thing with the footwork, you know, what we were able to do at FIU was Coach Motors would generally take the tackles, and I would generally take the centers and guards. And a lot of days, if he took the guards and tackles, I would take the centers. So the footwork is very different for it varies based off of your scheme, but mm-hmm. the footwork can be very different. When you look at a tackle, you know, you're really essentially teaching two types of sets. You know, the age old argument right now is the vertical set versus, you know, the 45 degree set. And when you look at offensive line, your initial footwork, when you kick, slide, however you call it, and I call it kick post, mm-hmm. And kick drag, because I don't like the word slide. You should always be winding back up in essentially the same position your feet were in your stance, that same shoulder width demeanor. So we place a lot of emphasis on making sure that when we kick to landmarks, that our initial kick was immediately accompanied by that lead foot being dragged right back with it to replace our base right away. So the way I kind of equate it to, if I were to take five kicks from my initial position at a 45 degree angle, when you stop, if I were to measure your base from when you're in your stance to when you finish your last kick, it should essentially be the exact same distance. And, you know, talking footwork, you know, I'm a big believer, have that kick foot fully in the ground. You want to turn that foot about 45 degrees out, if I'm trying to give a visual. And then that kick leg, it's almost like a bike stand. I'm going to turn that back in. Like if I'm putting my brake down on my bike, I'm going to take that knee, turn the foot out 45, and I'm going to just turn that knee and screw it back in to try to get my hips back to being square to the line of scrimmage. And all my power that I generate when I kick off the ball is generated through the insteps of my feet. So, you know, you see a lot of young linemen, they'll have their toe in the ground and they'll have the heel completely up. You know, a lot of that is kind of what they get. You watch certain guys in the NFL and they do that. But for a lot, you know, college guys, you know, you lose a lot of power when you do that. So everything that you do from a pass pro demeanor, whether it's guard, whether it's tackle, center, it doesn't really matter. It all comes from being on the insteps of your feet, trying to get that full foot in the ground, but generating all that power. So when I kick, you know, if I'm talking about loading my weight up on my front foot, I'm pressing off the insteps of my front foot. So if I'm a left tackle, my right foot's up, my lead foot, I'm pushing off that right foot insteps because that's where my power's at. There's not a lot of power on the outside of your feet. And then we call it, you know, the way a lot of people are saying right now, I know LaCharles Bentley, it's the drive catch. And, you know, I think they say, and it's, that makes a ton of sense. Like mm-hmm. you're catching the ground with that foot. And then the same thing when you're redirecting guys go inside is that kick foot, you're on the instep of that kick foot. So when I go inside and post, I'm pressing off the instep of my left foot if I'm a left tackle back inside. So the way I always tell the linemen, you got to be able to play on the insteps of your feet. You want to play with full feet in the ground, you know, seven cleats, five cleats, whatever type of cleat they wear. You know, you don't want air under the feet, and you got to be able to play with really good bend and posture.
Coach, from there, then the hands, the coaching points on the hands, because I agree with you. You don't want to get those shoulders turned by throwing both at the same time. You don't have a lot of answers if you don't win on that initial right. punch. So this is, I think, a very sound way of being able, again, to keep square and then have some counters available if that initial strike doesn't work.
Exactly. You know, the way I equate it is, it's kind of funny. One of the first things I ask all young old linemen is, I'm like, how many of you guys have been in a fight? And every year it's less and less kids.
Yeah.
And I just think about, you know, our scraps in the playground and all that, you know? So then I kind of talk to them about, like, okay, how many guys watch boxing? Pretty much every kid raises their hand. They've watched, you know, at some point, Pacquiao, Mayweather, you know, this generation. And the way I kind of equate, I tell them, I say, when you watch those guys, when have you ever watched a boxer throw both hands forward at the same time? And guys will look at each other and be like, well, not really, never. I'm like, yeah, I haven't seen it. You know, it's generally one hand is up and then it's a jab. And I said, when you're throwing that haymaker, you know, you're jabbing. And then that second blow is the one that can finish it off if the first one doesn't. But the other reason for that is that second hand is protecting you. Like, if I'm striking with both hands, if my hands are taken right now, I'm done. You know, we can talk about having your feet and putting you in place, but it, to me, like, the double punch is an all or nothing thing that you have to use occasionally. You know, speed to power. If I'm jump setting a guy, if I've got a tight three on me and I know I'm a better athlete, you know, I'm a guard, I'm just going to quick set right now and grab him with both hands. But to me, like, the two positions you see the most are tackle and center. One being the center, the ability, I tell every young center, the ability to be able to snap the ball and shoot that offhand as you're getting back off the ball is the most underdeveloped skill on the offensive line. Like, it is, that is a weapon that so many young men and college players, you know, they don't have the ability, they don't work it, to fight a guy and be able to use both hands. And when we teach it, you know, everything we teach, we will start with a man with a shield or a med ball on your outside shoulder, no matter what position you're at. And we'll just work, you know, vertical set, you know, lateral set, 45-degree set, just staying square and only punching with that near hand to the defender. Elbows, you know, elbows screwed in, thumbs up, striking with the palm of the hand, you know, gripping it with, you know, with the full fingers. And we'll constantly work that. And then what we'll transition to from that is we'll work from them walking up the field, us striking with the outside hand, to them now taking an inside step and slowly walking in and engaging that drag hand to snap that back in to catch them. The big mistake a lot of guys do when they do it, I think, is a lot of guys, you know, young man, they want to punch everything fast, you know, quick 1-2, 1-2. Slow it down while you teach it. We do, everything we do is progressive teaching. So, like, the first day when I got to Bryan, we did it. Our hands were not good, not good at all. And the guys got better and better. And I think initially the guys were frustrated because we were just so slow with it. But I tell guys all the time, you have to master the technique before you can fully engage it. So that to me is the most important thing. You know, when you're teaching the independent hands, you know, get guys used to striking. And then the last thing with it is easy visual to kind of teach kids. If you were to stand in front of me right now, Keith, I would tell you to put both hands out and reach for me, just hands straight ahead of you. And I would say, okay, how long are you? Can I touch you? And you'd be like, yeah, probably. Then I would tell you, just reach out with one arm and see if I can grab you. And kids are always amazed when they do that, when you reach out that near arm, how, like, I can't grab their shoulders, even if I'm a longer guy. And the answer is this, you are longer when you play with one arm than you are with two. It's not even close. So it is a huge advantage when we talk independent punch to be able to play with that, because I'm able to attack a defender. I'm able to make myself about, you know, maybe 3 to 4 inches longer, which in football sense is essentially a mile, while still keeping that inside hand ready to go, activated, ready to punch.
Yeah, I think that principle for offensive line is very important. Teaching them that whole idea of one arm is longer than two, you know, comes into play not just in pass protection, really in a lot of different techniques or schemes that you want to work. Because yep, the main thing is you don't want that guy on the other side of the ball getting into you. The longer you can play, the more advantage you have.
And I used to always tell that when I coached D-line, that was my big thing. I used to tell guys all the time. I would tell them, listen, you're longer with a one-arm stab than you are with the speed to power. Like, you know, the age-old thing at every camp, don't bull rush. Like, there's a reason for that. Like, yes, we don't want to get anyone hurt at one-day camps. But as an old lineman, I was a heavier guy when I played. I was 325. I loved when people bull rushed me because I was able to just use my mass and I was able to double punch and grab guys. I hated the guys that were able to long arm and fork, what I call forklift, and get that hand in my chest and just lift me and press me away where my hands couldn't reach them. And so the same thing applies to the O-line. I tell the O-lineman, you know, from coaching D-line, I say, guys, you want to be long so they can't get those hands on you. You know, keep that shoulder free, keep the helmet back, and keep the head out of the block. You know, make yourself as long as you possibly can and play with great leverage.
Coach, from the technique, and you gave us the basis of the feet and the hands there, scheme does become important. And I know in having coached both quarterbacks and O-line at the college level, I felt, and this really started when I was the QB coach, I felt it was very important for our quarterback to have an understanding of how protection works. So when we would have those protection meetings he was actually a part of it. And we were able to develop, you know, for us some tools that allowed him to help the guys up front. And so he was always part of it. As our guys got older, usually our older guys would make a lot of those calls for the offensive line as they were down in their stance, because they were able to pick up some indicators and able to see things a little bit better. But it was always the fail-safe was certainly on the center, and he had the final rule. But the scheme and making those calls, the identification of the defense, I think becomes very important. And more, especially as you see, you know, one of the trends this past offseason, we had a lot of guys come on and talk about or write about on our website, you know, the creepers, the simulated blitzes, all those kinds of things.
Yep.
Is becoming more and more difficult to make sure you ID it the right way. So what's the process for you guys? Because I'm sure at FIU, you guys were seeing a lot of exotic blitzes and those types of things to try to get to the QB.
So what you kind of said a few seconds ago nailed it on the head of the quarterback. Our quarterback at FIU, you know, both quarterbacks, you know, James and Christian, the amount of time that they spent in protection meetings with the OC, the amount of detail that those guys put into their studies, went all the way back to summer workouts. Like, it starts in the summer, and they would do blitz pickup protection about 3-4 days a week as a team. Like, no coaches, like offensive line, go out with the quarterback, get guys out on scout team on defense and ID in it. And part of what, you know, we did there was, we would, you know, one of the things in my job as a GA was we would draw up different looks that they would see from week one, you know, up to like week eight. And so they didn't know it was essentially like a week one opponent blitz, but they were repping that stuff all summer long. So to me, like, you know, your quarterback is an extension of the O-line when it comes to pass protection. No different to me than if you were to talk run play, how your running backs and need to be an extension of the old line. Like, the running backs, big mistake I see a lot of guys make is, you know, the running back is, I'm hitting the A gap in this place. That's the play says, well, why am I hitting the A gap? What is the old line doing to deliver the blocks and all that? So going back to the pass protection part, you know, I think your quarterbacks have to be in the meetings. I think they have to spend a lot of time studying film through the line. The best way to me, and probably the best thing that, you know, I learned at FIU was this. I used to coach offensive line, and I would say, okay, this is an under defense, and they're bringing sand pressure from the field. Okay, so this is what they're doing, and that's the key word. I would just use what they're doing. The older you get as a coach, you start to ask yourself, why are they doing that? You know, and that, for us coaches, we get that. But a lot of times when you look at it from a player perspective, you have to really ask your guys, do they understand why they're doing this? Like, why is the Sam coming on this play? Well, it's because the safety's capped him at 8 yards. The safety is clear, the coverage is clear design, where that guy has no responsibilities to that part of the field. That's why that guy is blitzing. So teaching the guys to understand the why, to me, is the most important thing. And then the next most important thing, and this is the thing I probably took the most from FIU, was understanding the who of what is on the field for the defense. So we would spend probably, you know, the as a GA, the most, you know, obviously we did our formation sheets, and then which was the most stressful thing, and then the depth chart. And I used to tell guys, like, you know, guys who had just, you know, joined us, but yeah, you know, I asked the one guy the one day, I was like, hey, print out, you know, I'm gonna give you the depth chart. And he came in and, you know, he printed out this basic depth chart, and I'm like, no, like, what position are they, what else do they play, why are they playing it? Like, the detail, when you look at an opponent's team, you have to understand who is playing in what position. So what I kind of equate that to is, if it's a four down defensive line, our guys at FIU were taught to understand, well, this number, he's a D lineman, this number, D line, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, in this package here, well, all of a sudden, number eight, who was a safety, is now playing the defensive end position. So that in itself, we might change the way we ID the protection and how we set our protection. And our guys were the masters of that. And it was because of the level of detail that Coach Skrosky and Coach Mogridge put into it. And that, to me, changed how we ID'd things, and also changed the success that we had. You know, it was understanding why the teams were doing that and who they were doing it with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Because yeah, I think that whole idea of, number one, I think you got to have a protection meeting. Maybe,
yes.
You know, you don't throw the ball that much, let's say at the high school level or where you're at, but, you know, at some point you're going to have to do it, and you have to have that plan. It has to be very sound. You can't just say, oh, well, you know, we're to slide this way and man up this way and the back will insert here. You know, that's good against a defense that's really static. But as you get into, again, a lot of those modern weapons they're developing with hybrid players, like you said, that guy who is a safety and now is up in a defensive end position, you have to know all those things. You need to be able to find those indicators. And as you were talking, and I'm thinking about the time we have in the summer, you know, we spend all the time with the quarterbacks out there throwing the receivers, doing 7-on-7 stuff, and the O-line guys, you know, they go and do their thing, spending a lot of time maybe doing stuff that's not even football-related, flipping tires or tug-of-war. You see all those things at these big man things where they can be working on the identification part. I feel it's so important. You know, I think there's a lot certainly that goes into technique, and that has to develop. You know, you're going to have to develop the physical part, but you could put your guys ahead in understanding protection and understanding defenses with going out and doing some blitz pickup where it doesn't have to be physical at all. It's a mental drill.
Exactly.
It's a vision drill where you can do those things. I suggest, and I always suggest it on here, a tool that I you know, came across with the Go Army Edge app. I mean, I'm thinking if I had a high school team right now that I could work with in the summer, you know, that would be part of what they do every single day. I had them spend 15 minutes. You throw that up on some big surface somewhere. You throw a projector up there with all the blitzes you could throw at them. And in a, you know, in a 15 minute period, when we were doing it, when I was the offensive line coach at Oberlin College, we would get in 60 to 65 reps in 15 minutes with all our guys understanding all the different things that were coming at them. And that's a big part of it too. Yes, you're going to rep the skill out on the field and work on those things with your guys. But if it's just all skill and there's not the understanding of the scheme, then you really don't link the two together. So huge opportunity,
correct,
I think, for guys to use that right now, right here in the summer, whether that's, you know, putting a scout team out against them, or like I said, something I felt was a heck of a lot more efficient because I didn't have to direct anybody. I just pressed the button, was putting the Go Army Edge up on a big wall and letting them see,
right,
where the defense is going.
And like you said, with that app and with walkthroughs and all, this generation, in my opinion, is a visual generation. And they have the ability, and I argue sometimes with friends of mine, I tell them, I think this is the smartest generation because they have the most amount of resources within the hand. I can pull my phone up right now and I can go out there and I can learn more about O-line play than someone 50 years ago could learn their whole life. And I think visually that's what young men are used to. So it's, you know, the apps, it's the walkthroughs. Like, as important as our technique is, understanding why we are doing things is even more important. And, you know, that to me is such a big reason of the success that, you know, we had there and I've had in the past. And, you know, what I'm hoping to bring here to Bryant University is, you know, understand what you're seeing, why they're doing it, who they're doing it with, and what it means.
So, because the identification of the defense that goes along with your scheme, all that really is a process, right? It starts with,
yes,
one key thing, and you guys may move through that and make all your calls that get everybody on the same page and essentially get everybody blocked up. And I don't want you necessarily to talk through all the details, you know, and give away everything that you do here. But if you could walk us through, you know, something very basic here, basic protection against a basic defense, walk us through the process for you of how you're going to go about doing your work pre-snap to get your guys in a position for success.
No doubt. So generally what I think you start with is, first things first, how many down linemen are there? You know, I identify the defense. You know, I'll just keep it real simple. If we call a base 6-man protection, and this is the same pretty much every school I've been at, you know, you've got a zone side or a slide side, as, you know, some people say it, and then you've got a man side. You know, the man side is the side where the running back is gonna scan backside and work to protect. You know, when your center gets out there, or whoever your smartest lineman is, you know, generally you want it to be the center because he can see the left and right side of the O-line a lot easier. I identify how many down linemen they are. Then identify the box. So, you know, if it's four down linemen, keep it simple. Four down. Two linebacker box, 4-2. So right away now, before we even start getting through the nuances of the protection, we've identified how many guys that we're potentially going to be responsible for. And then, depending on your scheme, depending on what you do, you point out who you want to send your line to. And the reason why I think the identification of how many down is important is it alerts that backside guard on the man side of the protection if he's in or out of the zone / slide. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And that, to me, right there, like if you just strip it down to its most basic element, right now you've already set your communication. You've identified how many down linemen there are, how many linebackers, and you've also given the quarterback the visual right now of who he knows he's going to be protected from. From there, now you get into the running back, you know, ID and who the minus backer is he's responsible for. So right now we've got a plan. So if it's base, you know, six-man protection, let's say the zone size to the right, it's a over front to the field. So let's say we're on the left hash, the field's to the right. We're setting the protection right. The man side's to the boundary, the zone side's to the field, the running back's to the boundary. I have a shade to the boundary over the center. So that left guard now knows I'm in. You know, I'm in the zone / slide part of the protection. That tackle now knows he's manned up. Because he knows how many down there are, that guard knows that because he is an inside player, he's part of the zone. So we've identified that part. We also know because we have a six-man protection, it's a 4-2 box, we can account for all six. The running back can get the minus backer that we cannot account for the O-line. Now that then gets into a game plan thing of, okay, well, what if they bring Sam pressure? What if they bring, you know, seven-man pressure? Now we can kind of get into, you know, the more nuances of it, changing the point of the protection, you know, changing the protection. You know, and then the same thing applies to, you know, so I'm going to present the same picture, right? We're on the left hash, six-man protection. We're sending the protection to the field, the zone slide side, man side to the boundary. Except it's a three down front now. So you got zero nose. You've got 2-4 eyes or 2-5, however you want to look at it. Two interior linebackers. You got a Sam walked out, and you got a Will walked up on the edge. So the Will's on the line of scrimmage. Now this comes into, once again, who are we going to ID? We're going to identify it's three down because there's only one guy between the B gaps, two linebacker box. But now we got a guy walked up on the edge. So now this comes into the who. And this is where I thought we did a really good job at FIU and play, you know, what I've really taken from that. Who is that guy? Is he a 4-D lineman in the game? Because we've studied their depth chart and we've studied their roster, that they're just playing a three down front where he's in the boundary. If that's the case, we don't want a running back picking up a D lineman 1-on-1. So we might down him and make him a 4-D line, and now that'll pull the backside guard and tackle out to the 4-eye and then that guy. Let's say he's a DB, or let's say he's just a Will backer. Well, now we feel a little bit more confident. You know, we might man up the backside tackle on the 4-eye and bring the guard to the field of the zone, and that running back will go pick him up if he comes off the edge. So that, to me, is a basic way of kind of explaining how we do it. You know, you ID the front, you ID the box, you can ID the point then, but you also need to know who it is that you're blocking. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So, to me, that is the mindset and the progression that we will always start every play with.
Yeah, and I know a lot of that does go into the game planning part of it as well.
Yeah. Right?
You know, especially you start to see some of those odd front teams who, you know, work on disguise and, you know, certainly want to bring at least 4, sometimes 5, sometimes 6. It's knowing, you know, who most likely, based on what we've seen, are going to be the guys coming. Because you'll find that guy, you know, you might watch 3 games and like, wow, this guy only blitzed 1 time and it was in this situation in the game.
Correct.
Like, you can almost not include him sometimes in the slide, in the protection. You certainly want to be aware of him, but you know, like, we're just wasting a guy if we think we're going to include him in the sort.
Correct.
Let's move it out to this other guy instead.
Correct.
Well, Coach, I appreciate the details you sent with us. I definitely would love to have you back on the podcast and talk through some more offensive line things and some scheme. Best of luck to you and the Bryant Bulldogs here in 2019.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Coach, we'll share your contact and your links in our show notes. And Steven, thank you again. And we'll be in touch soon. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as 3 free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year-round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches' notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches' notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable, and you can download those and put them into your Huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a Huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis articles, and coach. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.